Lake Effect continues on WUWM. I'm Mitch Teich. As we heard before the break, Milwaukee's manufacturing industry includes a sizable and growing portion dedicated to food processing. Lake Effect producers recently spoke with three Milwaukee-area companies about what advantages our region brings them and what they provide our community as well as our economy. Stephanie Lecce begins by looking at a company that shows the international reach of the area's industry.
Kikkoman Foods Incorporated holds 57% of the worldwide market for soy sauce and now has 9 production plants across the world. But go back about 50 years and the Japanese company had only just started to market in the U.S. Later, when it wanted to start producing stateside, it chose, of all places, Walworth, Wisconsin, for a new plant which opened in 1973. But as Kikkoman's general counsel and board member Milton Neshek explains, the location wasn't really that strange of a choice.
This was our first plant in the United States, and of course it had to serve the major markets, west, east, and south, and the Midwest. So from a marketing point of view, we wanted our first plant to be somewhat centrally located. Secondly, our major ingredients that we use are soybeans, wheat, and salt. So we are very close to our supplies of soybeans and wheat, and that made it very economical. I think then the state of Wisconsin also played a very important part. Governor Lucey was very active and made a great effort to recruit the company. And of course, we found the labor in the Walworth area to be very favorable. They're hardworking. Many of them are part of farm families, and they have a tremendously fine work ethic.
So in addition to the advantages that Wisconsin had for Kikkoman, I mean, what does Kikkoman bring to Walworth and Wisconsin as a whole?
Well, of course, any time you have a new industry locating in your state, there's going to be economic impacts. Number one, you're going to be hiring local workforce. Secondly, we try to buy as many of our materials that we need for our production locally. And that would include the bottling, the containers, and many of the other things that are needed for the production. So it does have a tremendous overall economic impact, not only for Walworth County, but for the state of Wisconsin.
Now, I know soybeans are one of Wisconsin's top commodities. Does Kikkoman draw on this for its processing?
Oh, yes. We use a processed bean that we get from Archer Daniels, which is in northern Illinois, very close to our facilities. Of course, Archer Daniels is one of the largest processors of soybeans, so they are buying the Wisconsin beans to furnish to us.
Since Kikkoman came to the U.S. in the 50s, was there a huge demand for soy sauce at that time? And how has this market demand changed over the decades?
Well, there was not a great demand, but our present chairman, Mr. Yuzaburo Mogi, who is a MBA graduate of Columbia, had this vision that a plant in the United States would be economical. Rather than buy the soybeans and the wheat from the U.S., take it to Japan, and then process it into soy sauce, he felt we could save a lot of money by building a plant here and producing the soy sauce here. Well, after the plant was built in 1973, of course, our markets expanded considerably. So this plant, of course, has been expanded fivefold since it was originally constructed and is now the largest naturally brewed soy sauce plant in the world. Now we basically have three major markets. One is the retail market where you see our bottles all over in the grocery stores. The second is the restaurant business. That is a huge market. And then the third one is what we call our industrial. We sell our soy sauce to some of our industrial customers. So that's also an upcoming market, which is growing rapidly because food manufacturers have determined that they can enhance the palatability and taste of their foods by adding a small amount of soy sauce at very reasonable cost. So that market, of course, goes into the frozen foods, the chicken and marinades recipes, and canned foods, you know, all of the industrial food markets.
Well, I know that in the last couple of years, Kikkoman has further invested in Wisconsin by starting a new research and development facility. Why did Kikkoman open an R&D lab, and why did it choose Madison?
Well, the primary reason is because we have one of the finest research institutions in the world at UW-Madison. And the Department of Ag and all the research that they do in foods is one of the primary institutions worldwide. So our idea of opening the R&D lab was to use all the expertise of the faculties and the professors at the UW-Madison. We've got ongoing research extending the usages of soy. As you know, there's much discussion going on to reduce sodium in foods and trying to see what foods this substitution is compatible with.
Well, Milton Neshek, thank you so much for speaking with us today on Lake Effect.
You're very welcome.
Milton Neshek is the general counsel and a board member for Kikkoman Foods Incorporated, the world's leading soy sauce manufacturer. One of its production plants is in Walworth. During the interview, Neshek mentioned the company Archer Daniels Midland, which processes soybeans for Kikkoman at its Illinois facility. But ADM also has a factory here, and as Bonnie North found out, this one is dedicated to something a little sweeter than soy.
Ambrosia Chocolates has been on the Milwaukee food scene since 1894. It was purchased by W.R. Grace in the 1960s, but since 1997, it has been a subsidiary of the Archer Daniels Midland Corporation. ADM has also located its Cocoa Research and Development Center in Milwaukee. But what exactly does a large-scale chocolate manufacturer do in southeastern Wisconsin? Roman Blahosky is the Media Relations Director for Archer Daniels Midland, and he explains.
We currently produce more than 650 different products at our Milwaukee cocoa facility, from the smallest chocolate chip at 10,000 chips per pound to 10-pound blocks of chocolate to a tanker carrying 45,000 pounds of liquid chocolate.
So who is buying all of this? Who are the major customers? Is it mostly wholesale?
Yeah, we sell to a large variety of customers, from the single candy shop to large multinational corporations. Our customers are in the bakery, confectionery, dairy, drink mix, and food service industries. Almost all of our production here in Milwaukee is sold to customers throughout North America.
Is any of the product, say, Ambrosia? I know you still have the Ambrosia name. Is any of that sold in its own wrapper for eating purposes, like I'd buy a candy bar off the shelf?
Well, we have three brand names. It's Ambrosia, Merkin's, and Dazon, and we primarily sell to, again, candy shops or multinational corporations to then incorporate our product into their product. So walking into a candy store, you wouldn't find one of our brand names.
But you would find your product in any number of those products that were for sale.
Correct. You'd see our cocoa and chocolate products in those candy products, in cereals. We make cocoa butters, cocoa liquor, a variety of chocolate chips, chocolate coatings, ice cream coatings. So there's a number of products that we produce more than what most people would think of as a traditional chocolate bar.
One of the other things that happens here in Milwaukee is the research and development arm of all of this. What does that involve?
You know, we work with our customers to help them formulate their products. So we take the products that we produce, and then we work with customers regarding their end product and what they hope to achieve, and we work with them to formulate and develop and add our products as needed.
Okay, so you're working with products that you already have. Are you ever coming up with brand new things?
It's something that we're always looking at. We have research centers throughout the world specific to our cocoa business, and they're always looking at new products, new innovations, new offerings that we can provide to our customers.
How many people work here in the Milwaukee factory?
We have approximately 250 employees at our Milwaukee cocoa facility. And when you look at ADM as a whole throughout the state of Wisconsin, we have almost 400 employees.
What about ancillary businesses that you will work with to support either getting supplies or perhaps transport, or is that something that you do in-house?
We do. We have a global transportation network, so we work to source cocoa beans, deliver cocoa beans to our processing facilities, and then work with our customers to determine the best way to deliver our products to their facilities.
Walk us through the process of the cocoa bean arriving at the Milwaukee factory. What form is it in? Is it actually in bean form when it arrives here?
It can be in a variety of different forms. We have cocoa beans are primarily grown in West Africa, Cameroon, Ghana, Cote d'Ivoire. Those are the primary growing regions for cocoa beans. Those beans can either be processed at a facility that we have within the West Africa area, or they could be shipped to our other facilities. When they arrive at our facilities, depending on what the end product is, there are a number of steps that take place, for us to get there. When you take a look at compound manufacturing to produce compound chips, blocks, or a liquid bulk product, there's a blending process, a refining process, a temper process there. So when you go through the steps, there are a number of steps from start to finish to get to that dessert.
I assume there also has to be a taster.
There is. we work to make sure that our products are of the highest quality, and that does involve, sampling products, testing products to make sure that we're achieving the high quality that we strive to have.
Well, how has the chocolate industry been affected by the recession?
That's a good question. I don't have much as far as details on what we've seen from a financial standpoint there, specific to that facility or specific to our cocoa business in general. But it is primarily food products, food and drink products, and I'd like to think that those have fared a little bit better because everyone does need to eat, but I don't have specifics on that.
Well, where do you think your biggest potential for growth is specific to the chocolate manufacturing?
We talk to a lot of our customers to determine, where they're headed in terms of product innovation. And when you look at some of the larger food companies and beverage companies out there, they are continuously innovating, continuously working to develop new products, new formulations. And we play a role in that with our cocoa and chocolate products. So we continue to have conversations with our customers and continue to work with them to make sure that our products are meeting their needs.
Making bigger and better chocolate?
Bigger and better.
Well, Roman, I want to thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. I appreciate it.
Not a problem.
Roman Blahosky is the Media Relations Director for Archer Daniels Midland, which is based in Decatur, Illinois. ADM Cocoa took over the former Ambrosia Chocolates factory on Milwaukee's far northwest side in 1997. ADM's chocolates are an added ingredient in many confectionery products made by other companies. Lake Effect's Dan Harmon learned about another Milwaukee-based company that few of us know about, but which makes a significant contribution to many of the foods you'll find on your plate or on the shelves of your grocery store.
You won't find the Wixon label on many shelves, but there are several hundred people that work in their sprawling St. Francis facility doing things like refining flavors for salad dressing or working on extending the shelf life of meat and poultry. Chuck Eamon is Wixon's executive vice president, and he says that he doesn't feel slighted that growers and manufacturers get more attention than his company.
I think that the honest answer is that while to others that might seem to have come out of the blue, for me and the people in our organization, it's no mystery whatsoever. The Midwest has been known as the breadbasket of the country. It's as you look at where the major growing regions are between corn, beans, and potatoes, and just a whole lot of your staple items in dairy, your milk, your cheese. In the Midwest, all your significant meat processors from Chicago, Kansas City, Wisconsin. It's been inherent here. It isn't a new revelation, if you will. So it may be eye-opening to others that just kind of did an analysis of this, but it's really not new to me.
Well, for those reasons, is that why you are located in Milwaukee? Is there an advantage that all these things are in Wisconsin to you being located where you are?
It certainly is an advantage. Our company is a, we're a 240-person employee company that started the company started in Chicago back in 1907, but the Milwaukee version of this started in 1959, and it was a guy who worked over at Patrick Cudahy Meat Company, and he was part of his job was weighing out the different spices depending on which formulation they were making. So the Wiener formulation had its spice blend, and the Bratwurst had its spice blend and whatnot. Anyway, there were so many sausage companies located in our state, and the people that knew these recipes were the key people within those companies, each individual company, that if one of them left, oftentimes they'd leave with those secret recipes in their head. And the guy over at Patrick Cudahy realized this because it was his job. And so he thought there's a need for an independent blender to do all these secret formulations and service all these companies. Because of that, it's a great location and the reason why we started here. Out of our company came two other Milwaukee-based companies. Milwaukee Seasoning Labs was one company that started from a person that left Wixon, and then another company called Ferran left because of a person that left out of Wixon also. So there's three significant players right here in our state.
Can you tell us about the how you strike a balance, I guess, between technology and flavor? I mean, you obviously have to do something to ingredients to, or that's the whole point anyway, is to prolong shelf life or make it so that products can get to the shelf. So how do you balance, you know, this need for flavors and people want natural things these days versus technology that's involved in it?
It is a good balance, and we do invest in both, seriously. Because you always need to, you always are looking for and need to invest in the research to come out with new innovative products that will give you an edge and serve this ever-changing marketplace the way that it needs to be served. So we have an innovation process. We have a line of products that are called our technology-based products that we've invested in over the years. They just happen to be, we actually started into that process in the early 90s. And as we looked at what we were going to do, we looked at the baby boomers getting to an age that, by golly, they're there right now. And we thought that health and wellness was going to be a real focus in society. And so these line of technologies lent benefits to the health and wellness movement. And knock on wood, we were lucky that, in fact, that all has evolved. Then on the flip side, flavor, as you say, and flavor just keeping up with standard protocols of flavor, you've also got trend information. The world has become a smaller place. There's a lot more travel. People are tasting a lot of things at younger ages in a lot of vast places that they didn't really get that much exposure to like people in the past did. And when they get these new flavors and new experiences, they want to repeat them. And so it makes our effort to continue to stay ahead of what the flavor trends are very important too. Even though that isn't quote-unquote innovation, it is a nuance that has had a significant change to it in the somewhat recent past.
Well, related to that then, you know, Wisconsin has a pretty well-deserved image for being a grower and you know, a lot of natural foods or organic foods. Do you find there to be any kind of contradiction between our farming culture and image versus technology and then technology involved in that industry?
I don't really find a contradiction. Because of exactly what you're saying, most times one of the things that innovation needs to be is natural. That impetus towards natural and healthful is not changing. It's here and it's going to continue to be. So what you do then is that you don't want to stop innovating because of that. You just need to make sure that when you're innovating, you're doing it under that criteria.
You mentioned 1959. I'm curious to hear what you think has changed over the decades of, you know, like flavorings and that kind of thing. I'm wondering what's different now about how things were done in 1959.
Well, first of all, Dan, I wasn't the one in 1959.
I was going to say that too.
although I did start here in 1974, so I do go back. I do go back maybe longer than I want to admit.
Okay.
What has changed is, first of all, one of the things that hasn't changed is the stability of many things. I can't tell you specifically that the number one sandwich in the country in 1960, let's say, was the hamburger, but I would bet my next paycheck that's what it was, and it's the same answer today. So regardless of what else came along, there are some constants that might surprise you. Also, when we talk about the sausage culture, some of the great flavors out of the, you know, the Usingers and the Clements and the Johnsonvilles and those people of the world, those formulations that we produce for them have been consistent and steady for many, 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 many years. Now, it doesn't mean that they're not coming out with their own new innovative products. And in that regard, I think some of the changes are you're getting more ethnic flavors, some bolder flavors, more flavor impact, if you will, versus milder side. People have traveled a lot, and they like some of the flavor experiences that they've had. And go back to the baby boomers. As you get older, your taste buds get desensitized, and you actually need more flavor delivery to enjoy it as much as you used to when you were younger.
Oh, we don't want to hear that.
Okay.
All right.
Well, but it is a reality.
Right. Well, Chuck, thank you so much for coming on. It's interesting to hear this is all produced here in Milwaukee.
Well, very good, Dan. Thank you very much.
Chuck Eamon is Executive Vice President of Wixon. The St. Francis-based company employs 240 people in its flavors, seasonings, technology, and packaging facility.
That's Lake Effect's Dan Harmon. We also heard from Bonnie North and Stephanie Lecce in that segment. We'll take another break and then more from our Project Milwaukee What's on Our Plate series on Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio.